St. Paul is on a journey. He journeyed a lot, didn't he? And in fact, he wasn't actually a saint as we think of it at that time, only under his general description that every follower of Jesus was a saint, is a saint. That means you as well. He's traveling from Corinth down to Jerusalem. He's been on a fundraising tour, okay? Preachers have been raising money ever since. He's taking collections from the Corinthian church and other churches and bringing them back to the community of the followers of Jesus in Jerusalem. You might call the mother church of the followers of Jesus. Because actually, these outlying communities of faith have a great deal more in terms of resources than the folks in Jerusalem, who tend to be very poor, who tend to have great needs that they cannot meet themselves. So he's collecting money to bring that back, and on his way, either at one sitting or perhaps at a number of different sittings, Paul would sit down with his scribe, Tertius. If you look toward the end of the book, it will say, "I, Tertius, wrote this letter." He did, but Paul dictated it. That's how letters were done in those days. So Paul would have dictated, perhaps bit by bit and piece by piece, what we now call the book of Romans. It's easy to imagine that Paul just sat down one day and said, "You know, I think I'll write me a little law and grace theology." But that's not how it happened. He wrote to specific communities at specific times concerning specific issues. Now, he did not found the church in Rome. He had never visited the church in Rome at this time. He expresses a hope that he'll be able to come and visit them because he's going to be traveling. Once he deposits the money with the church in Jerusalem, he is going to be traveling through Rome on his way to Spain. He talks about, just before what you heard Nancy read, Paul talks about how every government is established by God and comes from God. Every government? Really? All of them? And we are supposed to honor those in authority, and we are supposed to respect them, and we are supposed to pay our taxes. That's right, pay our taxes. A variation of render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and unto God that which is God's. It's interesting, you'll hear references to the sayings of Jesus in this book, but remember, the Gospels hadn't been written yet. They would be written for a few more years. He's receiving all of this through oral tradition. And when he admonishes folks to obey the government and pay their taxes, it might be just a general kind of admonishment, or it might be helpful to know that less than 10 years earlier, all of the Jews had been expelled from Rome by the Emperor Claudius. They had been expelled because of some troublemakers among the Jewish community who were followers of a person named Crestus, which we think is a corruption of Christus. It was the followers of Jesus who caused the trouble that got the Jews kicked out of Rome. They'd just been let back in, interestingly enough, by the Emperor Nero. Is Paul suggesting that maybe they should be a little quieter this time? That maybe they should, as far as they can in good conscience, follow the law and do whatever they're asked to do? I don't know. But he's very clear, even though we may owe certain things to the government, there is one debt that is above all. The debt of love we owe each other. Now, that works out pretty well if somebody has loved you already and you feel indebted for that love and you love them back. But how can we be in debt to everyone even before we meet them? Well, Paul has an answer for that too. God's great love, which was shared with us before we did anything to deserve it, before we did anything to earn it, which we couldn't do anyway, is given to us as a gift. Now, we can't really repay God's love back to God because God doesn't need anything from us. We could only offer a tiny, tiny bit of love back to God for the great love that God has shown us. So how do we repay that debt of love? We repay it by loving our neighbors. Here again, Paul seems to be quoting the traditions of Jesus when he says, you know, if you love your neighbor, you fulfill the whole law. All of the commandments, not just the top 10, the 613 that had been identified by the Jewish teachers that appear in the Torah. To love one another takes care of all of those. Because if we love, we won't do any of the things that are harmful to others and that break relationships. And so, Paul says, you owe each other a debt of love. In a sense, it's like a film that came out several years ago called Pay It Forward. You may have seen it. Now, I honestly, in all truth, went to see it because Helen Hunt was in it, okay? But I found after I saw it that I received a gift, an image that pretty well describes for me what Paul is talking about here. If we cannot repay God's love in kind, what we do is we pay it forward. We pay it to those folks who might never think that they are loved by God, who might never have received a word from anyone that they are beloved of God. You see, this principle makes Paul a radical liberal. That's right. I didn't misspeak. You thought he was a radical conservative, didn't you? No. Paul was a radical liberal because he made it his entire mission to move beyond the confines that his religion had defined as acceptable. Do you have to become Jewish to be a follower of Jesus? Was the question. Paul's answer was no. God's love extended to all the Gentiles, which means everyone on the face of the earth. Gentile simply means anyone who's not Jewish. His understanding of God's love was that it was so expansive that it included those that some, even in his own tradition, rejected. He had gone through the eastern part of Asia Minor, and he had been preaching this. And some folks had found it to make sense, and other folks fell back into their old ways, saying, no, if you are going to be a follower of Jesus, the men have to be circumcised, the women have to keep kosher. One reason Paul was headed to the Western Mediterranean is, in some ways, he felt like he had failed in the eastern part of the region. People were turning back to a way that he did not approve of. Because you see, he was welcoming all. Anyone who would come was welcome. There's a Roman Catholic New Testament scholar, Luke Timothy Johnson, who taught for many years at Candler School of Theology at Emory, at a United Methodist school. And a number of years ago, he suggested that this argument within the early followers of Jesus about who can be let in and who can't be let in might be helpful as we look at our modern divisions over the full inclusion of gay and lesbian people into the life of the church, into the community of the church. Because you see, as in Paul's time, there are congregations, United Methodist congregations, who think that you have to be straight in order to be a follower of Jesus. Now, I am very grateful, I am pleased, and I am honored to serve a congregation that does not believe that. That believes that God's love is so expansive, it invites everyone. And we are all called to come together in community. But you see, Paul struggled with this issue throughout his ministry. He felt like he was an apostle to those who had been rejected. He was an apostle to those who had been left out, specifically because if God could love him, God could love anybody. Remember Paul when he was Saul? holding the coats while others stoned Stephen to death for being a follower of Jesus. Remember Paul when he was Saul headed toward Damascus, breathing threats and murder in order to imprison and persecute the followers of Jesus? If God could receive him, God could receive absolutely anyone, even a Gentile. If God can receive us, God can receive absolutely anyone, no matter their sexuality, race, cultural background. All of those barriers we put up as divisions between people disappear. They are dissolved in the love of God in Jesus Christ. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That proves God's love toward us. Did you hear Nancy say that in the words of absolution? It proves God's love toward all people. And so in a few minutes, we're going to invite folks to the table. And in that invitation, we're going to tell you that you are all invited. You don't have to be a United Methodist. You don't have to be a baptized Christian. Because you see, the law of love supersedes all the commandments. Love your neighbor as yourself. Pay it forward, that love that you've received from God. Don't keep it to yourself. Pass it along. Allow others to know that they are beloved of God, just like you know it. That's the debt we owe. That is the debt he's talking about. And it's the primary debt that we as followers of Jesus have to be aware of all the time. Because we can never fully repay what God has done for us. Which means everywhere we go, as long as we live, our primary task is to pay that love forward to others. Especially those who have been rejected or hurt, who have been pushed away or persecuted because of who they are. We here at West End say that we are called to offer the loving light of Christ to all. That in connecting with God and with each other, individuals' lives can be literally transformed. The old word for that is conversion, can be converted, can be changed into something new by the love of God. So if I had to summarize the Gospels, I could do it, but I'd have to steal the words from somebody who's far wiser than I am. When someone asked Jesus the greatest commandment, he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul and all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. In this is not only all the law, but also all the prophets. That's our job. That's our debt. Let's be about paying it forward. Thanks be to God.